With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Establish the Pass podcast presented by Clutch Points. I'm your host, Blake Double. With me, as always, my co-host, Dylan Reagan. Back here the first time in a little bit. Holiday season, busy, as always, Dylan. But hey, it's playoff time. We know when to make our return. Especially time to talk about the playoffs. And of course, we've got coaching changes and all that, which we'll get to in the next episode, most likely. But we've got to get to our awards as well. So a very jam-packed catch-up episode here, telling lots happened. But again, we're to the playoffs now, and should be interesting as always.
Yeah, a lot, like you said, has happened since our last recording. We had our end of season predictions. We got a few of them right. We won't talk about the ones we didn't get right, but we nailed the Bills catching the Dolphins to win the AFC East. Just the schedule for Miami kind of lined up there, and the Bills took care of business. It wasn't easy in that last one. We also nailed the Niners clinching the top seed in the NFC before week 18. And then lastly, we got that Rams Lions playoff game that obviously I'm super stoked for as everyone in the country is, but yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We'll talk about those games, but like you said, yeah, let's first get to our awards. That in an interesting year. No, I don't know. I had to kind of like just earlier today, like really wrap my head around like, all right, there's a lot of really impressive guys for a few of these awards. Other ones, there's only like one, two candidates. I'd say Coach of the Year off the bat is one where, I mean, depending, there's just, I don't know where you're going to go. I have my own take already, but there's just so many guys, so many impressive jobs for all the, you know, right now with all the coaching changes, like you mentioned, a lot of the conversations about teams that aren't doing things right or what's not gone right for a lot of franchises and where they might go this offseason. But there were, I mean, not just some of the new head coaches, but incumbent guys that have been there for a long time that did some really impressive jobs where I honestly, I have an opinion on who I think I'm going to pick, but like, I don't blame, I wouldn't be unhappy with like basically five to six different guys that I think just had fantastic seasons for their teams.
Yeah, it's an interesting group. And we will start off our end of year in awards with the Coach of the Year pick. I narrowed this down. I'm like, my goodness, where do you go here? Because to me, here's the thing, right? I there's a part of me that wants to say, well, I feel like this is a three coach race, but then it's like the problem when you do that is usually, you know, you can look at Coach of the Year and base it on a team that has just taken a huge jump forward that maybe you didn't expect or anything, right? But to me, what that does is it sort of ignores the fact that, oh yeah, the Ravens went 13-4, yeah, and John Harbaugh like should not be, just because other teams got better. I think it's hard to ignore the fact that the Ravens go 13-4, and it's like, but I feel like that's Coach of the Year awards. Like usually, I don't know, not every year, but I think some years like this where you have a lot of interesting candidates that perhaps aren't on teams that, you know, finish with a number one seed or anything, but yet are on teams that take, you know, just went forward very quickly, yeah, maybe more so than we thought. It makes it harder to go back to the guy who's like, okay, well, he's done this before, blah, blah, blah. It becomes like too easy. So I want to give it to John Harbaugh, but I'm like, man, these other three options to me are just too interesting. And I feel like I need to give one of these guys some love. So in the three guys I'm talking about, Kevin Stefanski, for me, it's Dan Campbell or it's D'Amico Ryans. I think those would be the three I would narrow mine down to. I may have skipped someone that you're considering, but I feel like those are the three that I would put in there. And like, again, I don't think you can go wrong here. I mean, the Lions do this for the first time in forever. The Browns take a huge step forward. But this is a podcast that is, you know, lived on the AFC South here, Dylan. And I think when you consider what the Texans were, and we talk about just the importance of making the right pick in the draft and how quickly that can change things. It's not as easy, though, as just picking the right guys. You got to put it all together. And I know that division wasn't the best, but still, I'm going to give mine to D'Amico Ryans because I think that, again, the Texans, were just, we know where that team has been. They've traded coaches, feels like every other year at this point. And I feel like for him to come in, them to make this huge splash right away, make the playoffs, have a potentially winnable game in the playoffs against the Browns. Maybe I should have waited and made my pick to see who wins that game. But I'll go with D'Amico Ryans in my pick.
Yeah, unfortunately, you nailed my one, too. I'm going to go with D'Amico, but let me first talk about some of the other guys. You mentioned a couple. Obviously, I think Dan Campbell obviously deserves a ton of credit for what has happened to the Lions. I think he's one that I probably initially didn't put in my top three, but I think does deserve that consideration as a kind of more of a – this is an award that's always kind of it's your own definition depending on the year. Like you said, it a lot of times goes to the rising – team that wasn't expected. Think about McVay in his first year of coaching. Think about McDaniel last, with the Dolphins and what they were able to do last year. I think Dan Campbell is almost like more of the kind of culmination of 3 years of every part of the build that they took the time to. They didn't rush any one piece of it. Things kind of came together in the middle of last season. They've fine tuned it and then obviously took care of expectations. Now it's going to be a lot of fun to see what they do next. I think Stefanski was my number two guy behind D'Amico. I think, yeah, with the Browns, obviously with the number of injuries they've had, not just the quarterback position, we know all about that, but they also have had just on the quarterback, I saw a stat that they've had five. They're the first team, I think, since 1987, the strike season of 1987, the first team to have five quarterbacks start for them in a year. Yeah. So, I mean, that in itself is insane, but you think about all the offensive line injuries that they've had. Jack Conklin going down, obviously Nick Chubb, Jedrick Wills. I mean, just so many guys that are so crucial. A lot of guys in their defense. It's a real credit to what they've been able to look like and even thrive with Joe Flacco over the last part of the season, where I think Stefanski was my number two guy. My number three guy was actually Sean McVay. Maybe I'm a little biased, but yeah. The Rams, not a lot expected of that team going into this year. And man, not even just that, I was listening to the Athletic NFL podcast yesterday, I believe it was, and they were talking about just the fact that the Browns and the Rams in particular, their conversation was kind of on Stefanski and McVay and how the Rams, yeah, because of all the dead money they have, they're spending $180 million dead last in the league in total actual cash on their roster. Obviously, a lot of injured guys. Deshaun Watson's contract is going to eat a lot into the amount of money that the Browns and other teams are, paying towards the top of close to $300 million. But just with the actual cash spent on a team with the amount of later round picks and everything the offense was able to do, retooling on the fly from not just the players and obviously being able to draft Steve Avila and trading for Kevin Dotson really changed the mentality that inside of their line, but they completely changed their scheme with the way they run. So I think McVay deserves, at least for me, was I briefly thought about picking him, but I think D'Amico at the end of the day, I mean, it's just hard not to pick the guy given like this, just, every year it's like they just hire a coach, gone. Obviously hitting on draft picks is a big part of that, but there's a lot of defensive starters from the team last year that are still there, obviously adding a Will Anderson and really CJ Stroud and what he's kind of transformed that offense into is going to make a big difference. But I think just the whole feel of the Texans, it was a crucial hire for, Caserio. It was looking like he might be fired as a GM, and now doesn't look like he's going anywhere with what they've been able to do with, weapons like Nico Collins and obviously Tank Dell, the injury, pretty brutal. Would have loved to see what that offense would have been looking like through this whole rest of this way. But it's not even just that Stroud's putting up great numbers. He's throwing deep down the field. I know we've talked about it a bit, but he's like not turning the ball over despite throwing deep. That's not something that a lot of guys do. He's just a special talent, but I think, and we'll get to him obviously pretty soon here. But I had to go with D'Amico. I think just at the end of the day, the most impressive job. I think a dark horse one that was like the last one I was considering outside of the guys you mentioned and the couple other ones there was Shane Steichen. I think if the Colts win that playoff to the playoffs game against the Texans, maybe he's being discussed a bit more, but that was a team that, the feel at the end of last season was so down in the dumps. A lot of just overall was like, where are they going to go? And obviously the quarterback gets hurt and they still manage to almost get into the postseason and overall that whole scheme. I think a lot of what's happening in Philadelphia, a lot of people are looking at the coordinators that have left and the jobs they've done with their respective teams, with Gannon in Arizona and Steichen in Indy. But I think that's an underrated one. Yeah, it bodes well for our division. Our division, as we've talked about, AFC South is really on the come up. And I think the Steichens and D'Amico are two of the guys leading that charge for sure.
All right. Well, that's an easy transition into the rookie of the year, because the Texans are going for a clean sweep in our awards. I don't think they're going to every one of them, but they're starting off 2-0 here, because we're just going to pick one rookie of the year. Obviously, there's offensive, defensive, but we're just going to go with one. And I mean, again, this is a no-brainer. It's going to be C.J. Stroud, again, for all the reasons we just listed why, you know, D'Amico Ryans be our pick for coach of the year. He did get some help, of course, from a home run for the Texans in terms of drafting C.J. Stroud. And boy, did it pay off this season, and seeing not just what he did, you know, in year one, but it's pretty clear that this guy has all the tools to be a very, very special quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, he's already the best, you know, like, again, a top 10 QB in the entire league, not just among like rookies we've seen in recent history. He took things that he was doing well, and even the optimist coming out of the draft about C.J. Stroud wouldn't say that. I don't think many of them would have predicted this level of play this quickly, right? Like, we saw the Georgia game, we talked all about it, and you know, in terms of a lot of people that saw him at the combine and different events leading up to the draft, noted, it's like, this is just a rare ability to throw the football. But it's his, again, the not turning the ball over, and the fact that he's like up there with like rookie seasons, like, you know, as much as he's not, depending on the season, depending on the fan, and it's probably because he plays for the Cowboys, a lot of times people knock Dak Prescott still, despite the season he just had. But his rookie season was kind of similar in terms of taking out suddenly being this level of efficiency without turning the ball over. I know Dak now has had more turnover issues than he did as a rookie, but it's a special thing. I got chills watching that first throw of the game against the Colts, and I mean, that wasn't even his best play of the game. Some of the plays he had on that final drive for the game-winning touchdown ultimately were just ridiculous. He doesn't need like a platform to throw at times, and he's still accurate deep down the field. He sees things so well. It's crazy watching him, and it's just a joy. And as much as I want to say Puka as a Rams fan, obviously he had a fantastic year. And if there was, I was saying this to you before we started recording, if there was like an equivalent of the MVP and Offensive Player of the Year award, where it's like, all right, this one's basically the non-QB award, here's the QB award, then we'd have something to say for Puka. Obviously couldn't have asked for more of what he's been for the Rams, not just as a pass catcher, but obviously he was quite a bit in their blocking scheme. You're always seeing him running in motion, flashing through blocking linebackers, ends, all sorts of guys. He does all the little things that the Rams ask of their receivers, and obviously has an insane efficiency as well as a pass catcher. So, you know, had a few drops here and there, but despite everything he did, it's just you can't go against the guy that is like, you know, the real like difference between this team being, still, you know, I don't think D'Amico is getting even coach of the year here if they don't draft, if they flip the picks here, and who knows what it's like with Bryce and Houston versus CJ and Carolina, obviously different situations completely. Maybe D'Amico would have elevated things, and Bobby Slowick gets a lot of credit for what he's done as an offensive coordinator there. But man, I don't think there's any way, especially after that capping performance against the Colts, to say that CJ Stroud's not the rookie of the year.
Yep. I think it's a pretty clear choice for this one across the board, just based on, like you said, all the things that he did in his rookie season. All right. Let's move on to our defensive player of the year pick. Looking at the odds here for this one, Dylan, safe to say it's a three-person race. Myles Garrett, Micah Parsons, TJ Watt. If you're looking at the odds, they are all way ahead of the next person, which would be Max Crosby, I think. But his odds are like plus 5,000, 4,500, something like that. All those guys within plus 500 odds. So, yeah, it seems like that's kind of your betting odds there. So it probably couldn't go wrong with any of those choices. I would probably go Myles Garrett. We talked about kind of the Browns resurgence, and we mentioned too, right? Think about, they did it with all the injuries and everything.
Yeah.
That was one of the biggest reasons why. And so I'd probably pick Myles Garrett here.
Yeah, I think even with all the, as I kind of mentioned to you before too, this is the second half of the season, the injuries and some kind of the drop in the numbers, I'm having a hard time going with anyone else. It's the best defense in the league. He's the face of it. When he's healthy, I think he was the most dominant player on the defensive side of the football in the league this year. So I'm torn though, because TJ Watt and Micah, like you said, those guys just put up ridiculous numbers again. And it's the consistent pressures and it's the consistency over this course of the year. Man, it's tough. Cause like first half of the year, it's like no brainer. Even like the 2/3 of the point season, I'm probably adding Myles Garrett. He just had, you know, the span though, where I'm like, you know, was well behind in pressures over the second half of the season behind Watt and Parsons. It's just, I don't know, man. I might go with TJ Watt. I thought you might go with Stefanski for the last one. So I wasn't, you know, I had D'Amico already in my mind for coach of the year. Now we've matched on two. So I gotta change it up a bit here. So I'll go with TJ Watt. I think part of the reason it's not just the efficiency with the, you know, getting actually the pressures, but also following through with 19 sacks. The amount of knockdowns he had are pretty close to Parsons as well. These guys are neck and neck in some of these numbers. And again, Myles Garrett was on a pace to surpass all this before some of the injuries he's dealt with. But it's when I think of TJ Watt's season, I think of like just plays in games that were like at the most, like this is it. Like the Cowboys were kind of a team that they dominated a lot of the worst opponents. They did beat some teams with winning records, but we saw the Eagles kind of following when they topped them, and we'll see what they do in the postseason here. And Micah Parsons is an absolute freak. But I think of the Steelers and I'm like, they're not in the playoffs if it's not for like four plays, different like key moments of games that TJ Watt makes. It's just when they need it, in basketball, when you give it to your best player, like, we just need a basket here. It feels like TJ Watt's always the guy making that play. And that's why his injury here at the end of the season, pretty brutal luck for Pittsburgh, right as they're fighting to get into the postseason. But yeah, I'll go with TJ. Not something I would like to do. I've been huge champion of the Browns and talking them up, obviously picked them to make the playoffs before the year. And I feel bad going not picking Stefanski and now not picking Miles, but I'll go with TJ Watt. I just think, if Garrett had stayed healthy the whole year, I think easily he probably would have been the top pick.
Yep, I would agree with that. That's not a bad way to do it. We have to pick someone's different, you know, somewhere along the way. So it makes sense. We can split. Again, those are all three really good choices, I think. So, all right, on to our offensive player of the year pick. It's another one I'd really have a tough time with because I think, again, if you look at the odds and everything, it seems pretty clear cut, I think, as to who is going to win this. I'm gonna go Christian McCaffrey here. I just think, again, you kind of look at the season he had, and we know where the Niners wind up, and you know, quarterback wise, there were lots of interesting discussions. You can go, you know, different ways on that. Considering, and here's where things get interesting, right? Because there's going to be someone else that could essentially win offensive player of the year, but instead I think he's gonna, because that's how it works usually, Dylan, right? It's like the guy who wins MVP doesn't always win offensive player of the year. I think that's how it goes some years. And I know that sounds silly, but I feel like the NFL has always done it that way. So because I don't think Christian McCaffrey is going to win the MVP, it's going to go to another offensive player. As absurd as it sounds, I'm going to pick Christian McCaffrey as the offensive player of the year, but then I'm going to pick someone else as the MVP. So
yeah, it's, I mean, that's how it all, it's, this has become the unofficial non-QB best offensive player award, and honestly the best skill position player, unless maybe one day we'll see a left tackle that gets it, I don't know. But as much as I love those guys and I think that they mean a lot, it's become the skill position award, which is you know, I think in this season we did have a few different candidates. I'm gonna go with McCaffrey too, as much as I wanted to try it again to be different. Man, it's just the combination of numbers and what that offense looks like with him. A lot of guys have succeeded in the Shanahan system, and we've seen other running backs have great years, great play in there. But I just feel like McCaffrey is on a different level than these guys. And just when he stays healthy, and hopefully, I know we got a little banged up at the end of the year, it sounds like, with the week off against the Rams and now the bye week, he should be all set for the postseason. But I mean, when he's healthy, I don't think like there's a more perfect blend of a guy for, you know, any, maybe this, that's something that I guess a lot, some of the receivers that I mentioned think about here too, this works for. But I think of McCaffrey as like, yes, he's a perfect blend for Shanahan's offense and what he wants to do, but he's the kind of guy, what says so much about him is I think you could throw him into basically any system and he's going to be a good player. Like, I don't think he's a guy that lacks any part of the skill set that you would want. I mean, this is like, you know, it does remind me of watching Marshall Faulk as a little kid, you know, in terms of like just the ability as a receiver and a running back, to his ability to block everything. He's so powerful, always gets an extra 3-4 yards. It feels like the man, he'll have like 3-4 guys on him and he's like still just getting down there. So as much as I did want to be different again, like, so the two was thinking about were Tyreek Hill and CeeDee Lamb. I think if Tyreek Hill doesn't get hurt and he breaks some of these receiving records, I might have gone with him.
Now, that brings us to the MVP. And again, given the way this thing works, as we said earlier, I mean, you could theoretically, you know, give the Ravens the sweep of the MVP Coach of the Year awards. And, you know, I wouldn't blink an eye. I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. But this one's, again, pretty obvious, I would think. The betting favorites, far and away, is Lamar Jackson, and there's not even a close second. Like, I think closest would be Dak, but he's not even in the same stratosphere in terms of the betting odds. So pretty clear cut for me, Dylan. I think this is Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, it's Lamar. There was a point in the season, I know Purdy got a lot of love.
Yeah.
I know without the turnovers, there's times where I thought that Josh Allen should at least be in the outside consideration of this. I think there's too many turnovers by the end of it for me to really consider him. I think Dak as well, but it's what is early, like at the beginning of the podcast, I was kind of like, didn't really want to go too far into it until we got here, but almost gave it in. But it's just a year that I didn't think there was like a runaway guy for the longest time. Like, there's been a lot of seasons where we've had one player that just like clearly stands out as the guy, from like week 12 on or whatever it is. And it didn't really, there was not a lot of separation. Then two games in a row happened where Lamar, you know, goes off against the Niners. And by then it kind of felt like he clinched it. And then he follows it up with that 50 some odd point performance against the Dolphins in the game for the one seed. And it's like, all right, man, like we can't, this is over now. Like he, the thing about, you know, we've known Lamar, we've talked about Lamar on here a lot, and I've often mentioned, you know, we think he's a better passer. He's given credit for, and it's not, and he's always been given credit as a thrower, maybe over the middle and intermediate parts of the field. But I think this year they've really utilized his ability to take advantage down the seams, down the sidelines, throwing outside, just every part of the position. Todd Monken, I know early, you know, some skepticism over early on about what he might be able to do in his first year. But I mean, obviously the weapons that they have, the offensive line has come back to being better unit than it had been in recent years. And it's just a team that I know that we've seen them be successful, you know, making the playoffs last year with Lamar out for quite a bit without Lamar. And there's other situations where you might say, oh, what would this team be if this guy was hurt compared to them? But I just think in terms of what he elevated this offense to this year, I think the way they used him, obviously it took advantage of all the skill sets that were in place and that he's worked on too, and put them all, it kind of brought it all together to now, you know, and him staying fully healthy the whole year. I know that's been a struggle for him at times, but it's hard to say that any player is just as impactful at this moment for me. And just in terms of what he, how terrifying he is for the opposition, the fact that the Rams almost beat and probably could have beat the Ravens if it weren't for, there's a few plays where it's just like, there's nothing you can do. Like, you, everything you did is perfect, and Lamar just made a play. And I, you know, we'll see how it continues in the postseason. I do hope they at least move on to the AFC title game. I know there's a lot of things that have been said about their ability and how they've kind of shrunk in the postseason the last however many years, but Lamar's whole career, even when he took over for Flacco as a rookie, they lost in the first round of that postseason. But I think that this might be, it's just a different feel with the way this whole unit looks. And obviously it helps having a really good defense, but for this award in particular, I just, no one else really stuck out. And by the end of it, Lamar basically took the award for himself in those two crucial weeks in December.
All right. So there are awards. Now it's time to make our picks for the upcoming wild card weekend in the NFL playoffs. And so let's start here, Dylan, with the Browns, who we can, both these teams had a lot of mention in our awards. The Browns are 2.5-point favorites on the road to play the Texans. Again, sort of the surprise matchup. Don't think many people would have had this as a game in the playoffs going into the season. You did, because you picked the Browns to get here. Neither of us picked the Texans to get here. But, boy, this is an interesting one because of I feel like we could just, you know, loop all the things we just talked about with the Browns and Texans, just, you know, decide who we're going to pick. But, yeah, this should be a really fun game based on these two teams. And, man, I want to pick the Texans so much because, like we said, we just gave D'Amico Ryans the coach of the year, gave C.J. Stroud the rookie of the year, all of that. But this Browns team, like you mentioned, through all the injuries, through everything, like they have just found a way and just seemingly keep finding ways to win. And so I will pick the favorite here, the Browns, 2.5 points. There's something about this Browns team. I say the same thing about the Texans, but I'll pick the Browns on the road in this one.
Yeah, I'm with you. I wanted to kind of, I was like, man, and as much as I want to keep watching C.J. Stroud, I'm excited about the fact that he's very young and we were going to be watching for a long time. And
yeah,
this Browns team, this might be the only chance we get to see Joe Flacco one last ride. And it's been a lot of fun so far. We'll see, not hopeful that it's going to just stop suddenly any given point. But I think about the Browns and overall what this offense has looked like since he took over, and it's crazy what, again, we talked about all the injuries I dealt with in the coach of the year section. This defense, even with injuries they've had, and again, even a less dominant version of Myles Garrett over the latter few weeks of the year, and they're still up there with Baltimore. I think they finished second in DVOA. Yes, I'm just pulling it. Second in DVOA and defense in the regular season behind Baltimore. Just ridiculous what they're able to generate as their pressure and overall what Jim Schwartz has meant as a defensive coordinator for them in that side. I think the offense is elevated enough where there was a point in the year where I thought that was going to be the doom for them. They could do everything on defense to keep them in games and it wouldn't matter. Some of the turnovers, hopefully they knock them off. I did see a stat on Twitter earlier about how this is the first playoff matchup, I think, since the merger in 1970 between the team that turned the ball over the least, the Texans, and the team that turned the ball over the most, the Browns. So interesting kind of thing there. But, and Houston's defense has improved, obviously, from a year ago, from 28th in DVOA in 2022 to 16th this year. But they haven't been perfect, especially against against teams rushing the ball. And even though, yeah, obviously it's not going to be the same without Chubb, I think there's enough things here for the Browns defense to kind of flip that. It's part of turnovers aren't always just it's a combination of what you're doing scheme wise and ability wise. But often it's also some level of luck, fumble luck in particular, and also the level of the competition you're facing. And I think the Browns also just, you know, playing in that division, how battle tested they are. Ultimately, I just feel like I think Houston will definitely keep this one close, and C.J. Stroud just might take over, and we'll be talking about him as more than just a rookie of the year. It's all possible, but I think I'll go with the Browns, partially because I'm really wanting to see a Browns Ravens divisional round game and what that might look like with the way that I think that's the last team to beat the Ravens. So I think that a lot of you talk about the storylines we have in some of these games this week. We can get some more in that week and how much what the Browns fan base thinks about the Ravens, the former Browns. So I'll go with Cleveland to win this one.
All right. Well, next game, I mean, that one, like I said, a lot of storylines there based on these two teams getting there. But, boy, storylines aplenty the rest of the way here with some of these matchups. The Dolphins at the Chiefs. The Chiefs are 4-point favorites in this game. Of course, Tyreek Hill returning to play his old team in a playoff, setting here. That's an interesting dynamic. We know these two teams offensively, what they're capable of when they're at their best. And so that sets the stage here for what could be a very entertaining game, although both teams have been a little inconsistent at times. But man, I told you before we started recording, I'm like, this does not feel like the same Chiefs team. And we've seen all the reasons why, but it's really hard to pick against them in kind of this scenario here, because I don't know the Dolphins are a team that I want to see them win a game like this before I pick them to win this kind of game, I think. But there's, as I know you're going to talk about, like, there are so many interesting dynamics in this game, though, that plenty of reasons you could pick the Dolphins for this one. But I'm just going to lean on the Chiefs' experience here in this spot and pick them to win this game.
My bad, I was muted that whole time, wasn't I?
Oh, sorry. I was trying to check to see if it was my I thought my because nope. I haven't charged my headphones. I was like, oh, I think they're mine, but now I just realized. Okay, that's fine.
Sorry, Glide. I'm gonna have to edit a couple parts. I'll just pick up here in 3, 2, 1. Yeah, it's just hard to, I'm ultimately going to agree too. It's hard to pick against Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs. This is a team that, especially at home in the playoffs in the first round, not a place we've seen them often. I was trying to think back. I think it's like a couple of years ago, they had a wild card game against the Steelers, a Steeler team that I had less confidence in at the time than I do even in this one that we're about to talk about. But for the most part, we're seeing this, going straight to the divisional round weekend with their byes. But it's an interesting matchup, game that was really close. Obviously, the first time they played in Germany. I think if I had to pick against the spread, I would probably go with Miami because it's moved up to 4, and I just think this is a field goal game potentially. Maybe that will end up not being the case. Miami, I know a lot's been made of this team's inability to beat teams with winning records, but we've seen the Chiefs obviously struggle so much. It's just, even despite their offensive struggles, still showing up as 8th in DVOA on that side of the ball. Kind of crazy what, circumstances always haven't been perfect. A lot of drops, obviously, and will those things just suddenly fix? I don't know, but it comes down to me more so to the other side of the ball. Miami's defense has been decimated by injuries, obviously, a lot made of losing Phillips and Chubb on that side, but also, losing Baker there, whether, heart and soul, the play caller for their defense, having the dislocated wrist in the week 18. Just a brutal game and a brutal break for a defense that's been struggling versus a defense for the Chiefs that finally we were always like, if the Chiefs get a good defense, we'll look out. And then, of course, their offense kind of falls back to earth at the same time. But I think it's just that side of the ball where I have enough trust in Spagnuolo and what that unit's looked like and what Chris Jones has looked like over the latter half of the season, where I just think they're going to be too much. I'm not as concerned about as other people about the weather. I mentioned to you before, last year in Buffalo in that playoff game without Tua, the Dolphins almost beat the Bills and honestly could have with a couple of little bounces that didn't go their way in that one. And I think Mike McDaniel's going to have them, fired up and ready to go. But, I don't know if we're certain about Waddle's availability and even Mostert's. And it's like just it's the level of injuries and it's Mahomes. It's just too much where I had a hard time picking against them. But again, if it was the spread, I might go +4 Miami. I do think this is a team that's not going to give in. I don't think we're going to have a game like they had against the Ravens a couple weeks ago. I don't know if the Chiefs offense is capable of putting up a performance like that at the moment with their current build. I think there's just too much for Miami here to overcome it. I think the Chiefs will ultimately get the win.
Yeah, should be a good one. Again, interesting setup in this one. 4-point spread favored the Chiefs. All right, this spread a little bit higher. The highest one of the wild card rounds here. The Steelers on the road to play the Bills. The Bills, 10-point favorites in this one. So double-digit spread in a playoff game. Boy, that tells you kind of what's at stake here in terms of the Steelers having to play this Bills team that, as we talked about, in recent weeks, boy, they're a team that we always knew could get there, right? Like we knew they had, the chance to be able to kind of make this run here and, have a chance to really play well. But again, you kind of see what they've done now, Dylan, over the last little while and easily, one of the hottest teams in the NFL and sets up to be in a pretty good spot here at home, I think, against the Steelers team that, hey, Mike Tomlin does it again. We didn't know if they could get here, but they got it here. But man, this is a tough matchup against the Bills.
And there was a point in the season where I think it was like 10 games in for the Steelers where they're still being outgained on total yards every single game. And I was like, is this team really going to make the playoffs? I feel way better about where they were the last few weeks with the way that Mason Rudolph and the offense have looked. Fortunately, losing TJ Watt just makes this an easy pick. I don't think without him, it's like hard to imagine the Steeler defense doing enough, even with the big plays they've made. And even they've been very opportunistic. And I say this, and of course, with the weather being as supposed to be windy and freezing, and I think the weather might have more of an impact here than even the night before, where a lot's being made about Miami having to go to Kansas City. And, with the wind chill being basically around zero, I think this one's going to be probably in the teens as well with the wind chill and supposed to be much windier. And I don't know if that plays into Buffalo's favor. And the way that they play football they have in some ways reinvented this offense to be much more better on the ground. I know Miami did a good job stifling that for large portions of the game in week 18. But we saw this Buffalo team at home against the Cowboys. I know they struggled to defend the run. I just think overall they're going to find a way. I just don't, as much as the Steelers, again, have looked better over the course of the last few weeks on offense in particular, that to help a defense that was really carrying them for large portions of the season, it's hard to pick against Buffalo. I say this knowing fully that Josh is not going to cut out the turnovers, and we're going to have it kind of come down to the end of the game again. So if I'm picking spread, I am picking definitely Steelers plus 10 for me. It's just too high where with the weather, and I do think there, it's not just, unlike for some teams, turnovers can often be a luck thing. I think with the Bills and the Steelers, the way that the Steelers force them and the ways that Josh has given up some picks at times, it's not just him. It was almost early in the year, it seemed more unlucky. The later part of the year, I don't know if Josh was playing so much better as much as the Bills defense has been pointed out. I think through the first 9 weeks or 10 weeks of the year, they were 26th in DVOA, and they've been third since on defense. So, I mean, that's really where the flip has occurred for Buffalo to ultimately finish nearly in the top 10 on that side of the ball. I think that's why they're one of the scariest teams in the league, is because if Josh can just rein it in, and they still finish third in DVOA in offense, despite all the turnovers that they had. I just think the Bills are too good of a team to pick against them, but I see Pittsburgh and Tomlin and, the weather, everything. I see this being a overly low scoring game, but I don't think Buffalo is going to pull away by too many points in this one. I think Pittsburgh's going to make it tough. I think they're going to, run the ball okay. But Buffalo's had their fair share of defensive injuries, more than their fair share over the course of the year. So I think there's a chance here that this one stays pretty tight.
Yeah, it could be a bit of a grind here, I think, for this one, and based on all those factors you mentioned. All right, the Packers at the Cowboys, another storyline game here. Of course, the Mike McCarthy facing his former team, the Cowboys favored by 7.5 here at home. I don't know, Dylan. This one feels a little high to me, too. Now, I know the Cowboys, we've seen them, dominate some teams this season, but in some of these games against better teams, that's not happened. Like, they've, not always been the case. And the Packers, no one thought they could get here. They're playing with house money. They really don't have anything to lose because no one, again, thought they'd be in the spot. At 7.5, I'm not sure. Like, that feels like it's like you're setting me up somewhere. Vegas is setting me up for something here. I don't know what it is. It's either it feels too obvious to take the Packers plus a 7.5, but I don't know. I'm going to pick the Cowboys to win the game just because I think they're the better team. But still, curious to see how the Packers play here and maybe what Matt LaFleur has up his sleeve for this one, because it could get interesting depending on how the Packers kind of approach trying to slow down the Cowboys, and also, how do you kind of get past the defense, who has been, as we said, really, really good at times. So,
yeah, I know the Packers almost lost to the Panthers, but this is a team that over the second half of the year, starting, I think, almost with the Thanksgiving game where they won in Detroit, they've been a good team. I know their defense is still probably ultimately what's going to get them, and that's why, Dallas is the pick here, even with some of the good things that Green Bay's done. I just think that defense that, they've had outside of the Bears, and they just fired their offensive coordinator, and over outside of that game and when they played the Rams with Brett Rippon, and it did not look pretty for what LA was doing in that game in Green Bay, they've largely been a unit that has not done that well, and especially against Dak and CD in this offense. I think Dallas is just too good of a team to pick against, but man, it's that Packers helmet in Dallas, and we know how against this team in recent history how those games have gone. A little PTSD, I'm sure, for that fan base. I mean, Green Bay is sixth in offensive DVOA. This is not a team. It's legit. Jordan Love is playing great over the second half of the season. In the NFC, I mean, he's up there with the best QB play in the entire conference. And I think that's just, you can't discount what they've been able to do on that side. I know they've had their other injuries at receiver, and things haven't been perfect. I think Dallas is just a more complete team, and ultimately that's why I'm picking them. But, oh boy, it's, once again, spreads, these two high ones, usually they're the ones in the regular season. We're hopping all over for our betting locks. Okay. I can't say that's the case here. I think I'm with you. I'd pick Green Bay with the plus 7.5 at least. But I think Dallas is just too good. I think their defense is going to make it tougher for Love over the course of the game. If they're able to run the ball, and that's the one thing I know a lot's been made of, and that's why Dallas is probably hoping that some other team knocks off the Niners before they have to face them in a potential NFC title game. They just really, you know, defending the run has not been, you know, even though their run defense DVOA isn't that, it's pretty solid still in the fifth. There's been games though where you just see the interior of that team there. That's one way you're able to kind of neutralize what they did. And Buffalo game obviously sticks out, but they've had some other performances this year on that side. Some of, obviously the Niners game too. We played better rushing attacks. So we'll see if Green Bay, how conservative they get. Hasn't been a dominant running year despite the two-headed monster that they've had at times with Dylan and Jones. But I think Jordan Love, they're going to lean on him. It's going to be a fun game. Classic game out. Yeah, like you said, McCarthy going back against the Packers. I mean, there's just a lot of the matchups for this one and the next one couldn't have worked out better. It would have been a lot of fun still if the Packers were playing the Lions and the Rams in Dallas. But, man, I think the storylines are a bit better with the way it all end up shaking out.
Yeah, NFL had to be thrilled with the way this turned out. Again, getting several of these games and just kind of the top sort of storylines, whether it's Dolphins, Chiefs, Packers, Cowboys, now Rams, Lions. Rams are on the road in Detroit to play the Lions, 3-point favorites, Dan Campbell's team there. Hey, this is the one we said, you know, if you're trying to find one, this felt like the perfect setup to get, you know, all the story involved with Matthew Stafford, Jared Goff. Like, there's just so many things that you can have fun with in this one. And now it comes time to make our picks. And so here's the thing. Like, I feel like we're going to get an upset somewhere when this, again, I feel like it's less likely than Steelers, Bills, Packers, Cowboys. But among the other four games, I feel like there's an upset brewing somewhere. And so, since I picked the Browns to beat the Texans as the favorite, I picked the Chiefs to beat the Dolphins as the favorite. And not to spoil my next pick, but to me, it came down to, I've got to pick an upset somewhere. I have been all in on the Lions, as I told you before. You know, if we take this to the fantasy football discussion, I feel like half my team was built on the Lions this year. And had some success with that, winning the league in the regular season. But this is not fantasy football, Dylan. This is the playoffs.
Well done, well done.
And, I mean, this is one where it's like, I'm going to take a chance here on picking the Rams in the Matthew Stafford revenge game. I feel like Sean McVay will have a great game plan in place. It's the thing, too, right, if we have not seen the Lions in this spot in such a long time to where, you know, I'm sure even Detroit fans are probably like, oh, boy, I'm sure the nerves are just, you know, through the roof right now, thinking about the possibility of how this game could unfold. And let's also call it what it is. We've seen Jared Goff have some not so great games in some of these key spots before. We've also seen him in other instances, you know, step up with some big performances. I'm going to take the Rams on the road here. I still think the Lions are the better team, but in the playoffs, the better team doesn't always win. it is just the way it works. And so I have to pick an upset somewhere. I'm going to go with the Rams here.
It's a tough game to pick. I think this is the one I had the hardest time with when I looking back over the list. I always try to remove my own bias, but just overall from all the different football point of views. Like, yes, Detroit's a better team, I think, as a complete unit. But the Rams, obviously, on a roll over the second half of the year. We saw the games we saw them struggle with. We're all before the bye. We're all before things kind of all came together, especially on the defensive side. They really made some tactical changes with the way they attack and trying to muddy up the picture a bit more. And even though on the edges it hasn't been perfect, they needed another guy to compliment Byron Young. It's been great as a rookie for them. I do think that Detroit's going to score some points, but, man, I'm worried about the other side of the ball. And overall, man, it's just that I do sometimes think, like, and it could go the other way in terms of the crowd impact. And I do think just the level of hype and energy and nerves, like you said, if the Rams score and get a stop, like, is what's the energy going to be like in that building? And it's as much as it's a revenge game and a lot's made of Stafford, I think it's more Goff is the one I'm thinking about more so, and how everything went down with how him leaving the Rams, and he wasn't in, you know, the best place right after that trade and has come out of it, and Detroit's supporting him, giving him the time to kind of have a redevelop almost and kind of get some of the things that were the negative energy out of his brain and focus on what he does well. But I come back to also, does McVay, you know, he knows Goff's tendencies, and yes, they've changed. I think he's a better quarterback than he was when he left the Rams for sure. There's some things I'm sure McVay is not, and overall the Rams coaching staff does know about him and stuff, that even though Detroit has a different staff, you know, still some members of the organization that are obviously know Stafford well and we've seen them. So, I mean, it's, man, it's a tough game to think about what can either side of the ball. I think I ultimately end up going to Lions for a couple of reasons. I think it's the, I don't think it's the best, you know, there was a time for a segment of the Rams fan base where they thought they'd rather, you know, it would be better to face Detroit than Dallas, but Detroit has the number one run defense DVOA in the league. It's been such a crucial part of the offense for the Rams this year, you know, going from one of the worst rushing teams in the league to sixth in offensive DVOA on the ground. To now have this matchup in this spot, I think, yeah, we're going to see a lot of Stafford throwing the ball, and maybe they will, you know, find some holes in that defense. It's not, Detroit's defense has not been perfect in the secondary, as we know. But I think Detroit's also going to find ways to move on the Rams. I don't think the Rams' defense, unfortunately, for all the improvements it's made, it's still kind of more of a middle of the pack group. Raheem Morris deserves a ton of credit for what they've done. Drafting the Les Snead and the whole organization did, but also the development of a lot of these younger guys and guys like Akil Witherspoon that have come in and been so great at corner for basically the league minimum. But I think it all kind of catches up against a Detroit team that I think maybe they'll early on will be a little shaky, but I think they'll end up finding their groove. And I think it might come down to regardless of when the Rams season ends, I think special teams are going to be a big part of it. They were so bad. I think they're the sixth worst since DVOA has existed. They're so bad that they've dragged the Rams defense itself and its DVOA number from like 15th to 22nd. Like they're just so, every part of special, like not just kicking field goals, but punt coverage, everything. Like, you know, when they're punting, just block it. Like it's been a disaster that they're going to have to get together in the offseason. I just think that ultimately this game's going to be a really close one. And I think those one, two points from extra points or missed field goals, I think ultimately, or even bad field position from punting, I think ultimately that's going to be the thing that when the Rams look back and being like, man, we came out of nowhere and could have made a run here in the NFC that's not that strong. But I think special teams ultimately do them in. So I'll go with the Lions. But yeah, definitely the game that as a Rams fan, I'm going to be super excited for regardless. But I do think it is the best game that we have here. It's going to be a lot of fun. And maybe just this, all the storylines, what it means for Detroit, the energy in that building. I mean, I just wish I could, you know, get on a flight and go over there just to feel the city even for a couple of days, like let alone the game, but even like the energy in the city this weekend coming up is going to be insane. So can't wait for it, but I'll go with the Lions to eke out a win that, man, it's going to, the emotions for both teams are going to be running high, but I think the pressure is definitely on Detroit more. I think the Rams are going to be playing a little looser for sure. It's funny how that kind of flips from where the expectations were for the Rams roster 2 years ago.
Yep. Should be interesting in this one, as I said. For some people, this could be the most kind of anticipated game given the storyline in place there. All right, we wrap up with this one. What a wild discussion this is because of where these two teams are at and how they've been playing recently. The Eagles are still 3-point favorites on the road against the Bucs. Again, it has been a tale of two halves of the season, essentially, for the Eagles, or really just the recent. You've got a team like in the Eagles who've lost 5 of 6. You got the Bucs who have won 5 of 6. And so it has just been like the complete opposite. These two teams have played the complete opposite season where Bucs struggled early. Eagles were fantastic early. Now it's kind of flipped back. This is a rematch from these two teams playing back in week 3. Eagles won on the road in that one 25-11. Whew. I am usually, Dylan, a big fan of like the recent trends. And I'm like, all right, I'm leaning in on the teams that are hot. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just like, this feels like a reset for the Eagles, perhaps. I'm going to pick them here. But, man, you want to talk about a confidence level in a game. This is probably one of the lower ones maybe on the board just because I don't know what you're going to get from the Eagles here. And meanwhile, it feels like the Bucs have really started to, you know, put themselves kind of in a groove, even though they've won some close games. They've had some ugly games against the Panthers. But still, I don't know, man. This is an interesting one, but I'm gonna pick the Eagles. They finally figured it out here, but we'll see.
It's a really tough one to pick, just given what the Eagles have looked like. And expecting that flip of the switch, I'm not going to. Unfortunately, I'll go with Tampa to win, but I would love to see it because I do miss watching this. Even early in the year, the Eagles team looked different, and especially on defense, it looks like a tired unit. It does look like a unit that over the course of the year, you know, there's some things on the snap counts. Some of these guys were much higher than they've been in previous seasons and how that's kind of taken a toll. But also it feels like, you know, all the guys they lost in free agency, I mean, what they had done to build their defensive roster last year, with some of the signings they're able to make cheaper guys in free agency and the secondary in particular that end up walking in free agency, and you start seeing it really cost them. The spine of this defense is not what it used to be, and teams are running it right down their throat. And Tampa a year ago did not have any semblance of a rushing attack. They've finally been able to get something going there, even if it's still not always pretty. It's more of the other side. It's hard to watch Philly's offense right now because when they're cooking and when everything was working last year and even early part of this year, gosh, they're fun. And they just look completely lost. Like it's crazy. And maybe this is the week they find it. I don't know if they're bodes well for. They're probably hoping for the Rams to upset Detroit or the Packers to upset Dallas so they don't have to go to San Fran. Because if they win this game and go to San Fran, they're going to get, in my opinion, completely run over. The way they're playing right now, but for this one game, I won't be shocked if they find it, but I'll wait until I see it. I'm going to go with Tampa. It's a tough one to pick too, because it's like, you know, the talent level that the Eagles have is arguably higher, but there's still some good players there in Tampa that haven't played even perfect down the stretch here that, I think they're going to be licking their chops. It's going to be fun. I think they're going to be playing loose. Maybe some pressure on Baker as he's trying to get a contract, but as a team, I think you talked about them maybe as a consideration for the division way back at the beginning of the season. But I think there's more pressure on Philly to get this right. And for, you know, the coordinators there and even Sirianni, some parts of the fan base that are kind of wondering, you know, what's going to happen and is this really what we're going to keep riding with? So maybe for their long-term, in terms of fixing some of those problems, I think regardless of when they get out, I think Howie Roseman and Lurie and that whole organization are going to take a hard look at what's happened in 2023 into 2024. But maybe they put it off for one more week, but I'll go with Tampa getting the win.
Yep. Should be. Again, this is yet another one. Like, talk about the intrigue. This is we could look back at some of the recent ones over the years, and I'm sure we say this a lot, but it's like, I don't know that if you're the NFL, you could have done much better here in terms of just the intrigue surrounding a good group of these games, and really all of these games. I think you could say even the Steelers Bills, as we said, it's a 10-point spread, but with the weather and those kind of things and the Steelers just kind of defensive, like there's just a lot of things. Yeah. So this is a fun slate of games. It should be entertaining to see how they play out, but there you go. There are awards picks for the 2023 NFL season and our picks here for the upcoming wild card round. Of course, Dylan, lots of coverage over at Clutch Points to get everybody ready for all that. So let everybody know where they can find it.
Yeah, you can go to clutchpoints.com to our NFL section. Tons of breakdowns of the top coaching candidates that teams are interviewing, covering all the news, but also looking further ahead of what teams should do. A lot of breakdown of what the Bears are doing and what they're and or not doing and what they're going to do. So that's a huge question mark with Eberflus seemingly staying now in Chicago. So that's all covered at clutchpoints.com. And then also in the Clutch Points app, you can follow all 6 wildcard games in the NFL section there. All the same coverage, our podcast, everything in that same NFL section. So yeah, again, so excited. I mean, I'm always excited for the playoffs. NFL and the whole season's great. Playoffs are great. But man, something about these matchups, like you said, this weekend, it's a special time, and can't wait for Saturday to come.
Yeah, should be a lot of fun. So yeah, check it all out at Clutch Points, and be sure to subscribe to the podcast. As always, any podcast app you use, search for Established the Past. And thanks as always for listening to the podcast, and we'll talk to you next time here on the Established the Past podcast.